Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. In the month of January alone, more than a dozen sea turtle carcasses were reported to have been found in Terengganu. Now, what is behind this worryingly high number of sea turtle deaths? And what will it mean for the future of the species and the ecosystem it supports? To help us understand the urgency of the situation, we have Dr. Muhammad Uzair Rusli. He is a marine biologist and team leader of the Sea Turtle Research Unit under the Institute of Oceanography and Environment at University of Malaysia, Terengganu. Uzair, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. And I was wondering whether, you know, to begin this conversation, before we get into all the possible reasons we're seeing so many sea turtle deaths of late, I thought maybe you could begin by giving us some context, a sense of how the recent numbers compare to the number of sea turtle deaths that have happened, that has been recorded in the past.
Okay, thank you, Melissa, and also consider this. I want to put into this perspective that when we say, is it alarming or not, I want you guys to decide this, because different people will have different perspective, isn't it? So there are multiple causes of this scenario. So just last year, from January until May, we received about 20 cases only, 20 cases, so only within 5 months. However, this year, every other day, January, this year, we received the official report from Department of Fisheries. In Terengganu only, we received about 17 dead turtle stranded. So every life counts for me, so especially for the sea turtles. So this is because the survival rate of the sea turtles to the adulthood is very, very low. Under the natural condition, 1 to 1,000 of them can survive. However, during the current scenario, with the human interaction, pollutions, plus climate change nowadays, scientists say it is 1 to 10,000. So look at this. I want you to consider this. So you decide, is it alarming or not? It's up to you guys.
Okay, Uzair, thanks for giving us the option to decide whether this is alarming or not. But I do want to ask you, what is the total population of sea turtles? At least within the Malaysian waters or jurisdiction or within their ecosystem, how do you do a census of, in fact, the turtle population?
Okay, Sharad. Frankly speaking, I don't have an absolute numbers. For if you ask me how many turtles are there in our waters, so this is due to the fact that the sea turtle itself, they will just roaming all around the ocean. So if they are coming from the South China Sea population, they will definitely use the whole South China Sea population. So this is due to the 90% of their life cycle in waters, 90%. So the one that we only monitored, that we tag them every single years that they are come to the shore and nesting, is only the matured females. So how about with the juvenile, and also how about with the male turtles are there? We don't have any ideas. So we just use the population estimation from the mathematical modeling. So the nesting number fluctuating throughout the years. So they are not nesting every single years. So they will have about 2 or 3 years, and then they will come to the shore to nest. So this related with the ocean productivity from the La Nina event. So because the La Nina event doesn't happen every single year, so that will actually affect. So that's the reason I said it is co-founding effect. So from my rough estimation, we receive about from last 5 years in Terengganu. So we are talking about the Terengganu perspective, 300 to 500 individual every year to nest. So even though we have up to 3,000 nests in Terengganu itself, because they will come multiple times, because one single female can nest up to 8 to 12 nests. So this number might be not alarming, isn't it? Because I play around with the 1,000 numbers, 3,000 nests. So, but what if I say previously we have 4 species actively nesting in Terengganu? okay? But now we only have one species left, which is the green sea turtle.
I remember as a child going to Rantau Abang and seeing all types of different turtles. We only have, well, there's many other types, other species of turtles, or have we only had one green, one species of sea turtle, the green turtle?
So once Melissa said about the Rantau Abang, everyone will think about the leatherback, isn't it? Because, yes. Because this is the biggest species that we have. This is the legendary species. This is a very
icon of Terengganu, isn't it?
Yeah, the icon of Terengganu. I can say that every single Terengganu people, they are very proud to, even though they have the different plat number from another state of Malaysia, for example, Johor, J, or maybe come from Pahang, but they must. Normally, they would prefer to put a sticker, which is the leatherback turtles, on their car. Okay, so in Terengganu, we can say that the last nesting for the leatherback, okay, the biggest species, the last nesting reported was in 2017. So there were two nests at that time. Unfortunately, both two nests not successfully hatched. So meaning that we are playing around with the theory about there is not enough male to make it successful production of the sea turtle. So that's also the reason we do not have enough male population to counterpart with the female population. So at this moment, until from 2017 until now, we do not receive any report, a single report of the leatherback turtle that come to nest at the Rantau Abang.
So that's shocking, right? When a country or even a state loses its iconic animal, you know, that signals something quite serious. You'd think that at least the iconic animal would get some sort of attention. But I want to ask you, I mean, just in terms of the science of it, tell us, so the eggs are fertilized externally or how does it happen? Does it happen at sea with the male and then the female comes to shore? And what could be disrupting? I mean, you mentioned the numbers of the maybe declining numbers of males, but what else could be disrupting the fertilization of the eggs?
So I can say this is just like the female chicken, isn't it? They still can lay the eggs even though there is no male at all. Okay, so that's reptiles. So for the female of the leatherback, so we hypothesize that. I said this is still in the terms of the hypothesis. Okay, we said that there might be not enough male to mate with the female at this moment. So that's the reason because of back in 90s, we said that that time we just started our conservation effort in Rantau Abang. Okay, so actually we started way earlier, but for the Rantau Abang, we started about in 1984 or 1986. Okay, so the main goal that time is we want to incubate as much as possible our sea turtle eggs. Okay, then what happened is we want to reduce the risk of these incubating eggs by to reduce the number. The incubation period in the hatchery. This is due to the fact if we incubate them longer in the hatchery, they will subset into the predation, lots of the natural predation like ants and also crab and some other things. However, only in early 90s, scientists knows that the sex determination of the sea turtles, it's from the incubation temperature itself. So as you can see here, the gap between our effort in 1980s and the scientists just know about the fact of the sea turtle sex determination in early 90s. So I want to put this perspective that if we want to save the sea turtles, if we want to do the conservation effort, our science also must be at the same level with our effort. So that's the reason I said, if we want to put a lot of effort in terms of the conserving the sea turtles, we are racing with the extinction. We want to stop the extinction. So our science also must be raised and also want to be par with the level, with the pace of the extinction.
Right. I have one more question before we get into kind of the threats that are being faced by the sea turtle population here. But I do want to ask you, I mean, because some of the carcasses that have been found are mature sea turtles, are adult sea turtles, and you mentioned that 1 to 1,000 ratio of survival, it seems that it's such a challenge to get to adulthood only to have them die. Can you tell us very quickly about the life cycle? I mean, how old do sea turtles live up to?
Okay, so for the sea turtle life cycle, they are very, very unique, okay? So they start their life on land in underground nests. So the incubation period will take about 2 months, okay? So once they leave this in this nesting ground, so we cannot see them until they reach the sexual maturity. So this, the first 20 years of their life, once they leave their nesting ground, the conservation, mm-hmm. Yes.
The incubator. So that,
yes. So once they leave our country, for example, they leave Terengganu, okay? So only after 20 years, we can receive them. So these years, we term them as the lost years of the sea turtles, okay? So because we can't take every single sea turtles because they are too tiny. And the current technology so far, even though if we want to put a single tag into these only 20 grams of the sea turtles, it is quite costly. And also the predation rate of these sea turtle hatchlings, once they enter the water, so within these 400 meters in front of the nest, is only we did the estimation at our sanctuary, 40% of them will get predated. 40%. So that's only 400 meters for them. So that's the reason we also try to locate our sea turtle hatchings, because we, in the development of the science, scientists always said, if you say this is the last years of the sea turtles, this is challenge for the scientists. So how we want to locate them? So at the Institute of Oceanography and Environment, we try to use the ocean model. We want to predict them, their dispersal. So from our result, it shows that the sea turtle hatchings that we produce in May, so let's take an example, if they was born in May this year, and another cohort will be born in October this year. So both different cohort will push towards another area of the ocean, because in our country we receive the monsoon season, isn't it?
Right.
So that's the reason both different cohort will push towards another ocean. So this actually will make them highly resilient into any other natural factors. However, with the current scenario, they're not only facing with the human interruption, it is also another pollution at the part of the ocean. So that's okay. The reason it is really, really big effort for us because of the sea turtles.
Let's come back and delve deeper into those causes, Dr. Uzair. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on Consider This. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Hi, thanks so much for staying with us on Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation with marine biologist Dr. Uzair Rusli. He is team leader of the Sea Turtle Research Unit at University of Malaysia, Terengganu. Sharad, you had a question for Uzair.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, Uzair, so far. I mean, you suggest survival rates have changed from 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 10,000. You said we've lost 3 of the 4 species that used to land in Terengganu. I mean, these are extraordinary numbers. I want to ask you, though, about males, right? And you say sex is determined partly as a result of temperature, because there's a lot of talk about global warming. There's a lot of talk about how pollutants, determine sex as well. And so we see more females, we see loss of males, also loss of male fertility. I mean, you're kind of theorizing some of these things and looking at the conditions. What do you think is driving the population? Is it being driven, towards extinction? Is it essentially pollution? Is it human encroachment? What do you think, for you, stand out as the major causes?
For me, I want to take into this perspective that at this moment, even though we said we are talking about the natural threats and also with the human interaction, and we're talking about the climate change and so on. So at this moment, if we want to manage the sea turtles, the main threat now is about we lack ocean literate people. An ocean literate person that understand the essential principles and also the fundamental concept about the functioning of the ocean. So this is a quite big idea, isn't it? So this is because we need those people that can communicate about the ocean in a meaningful way and also able to make informed and responsible decision. So because I said that previously, we do need evidence. The scientific evidence for us to save our sea turtles. Otherwise, we are just wasting our time, our energy, and so on.
Wait,
so
hold on. Can I follow up on that? Are you talking about ocean literate people in the general population, or are you talking about ocean literate people in government? Because ordinary people don't have much power when it comes to policy.
No, I don't want to focus just on people that having power. So we need these kind of people, the ocean literate people for all level in our society. Yes, okay. it may start at schools and also government officers. And of course the policies maker, because this is the one that can actually have the drive to do or decide something or to invest something. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that we have an ocean literate person to explain something. I think I need a bit of education in this respect, because I'm not quite sure. Maybe you can help me learn a bit more about the role of sea turtles in the ecosystem. What would happen if sea turtles went extinct? What impact to the ecosystem might we see?
Okay, let's continue that with the, let's take an example with the ocean literate people. If they can understand with the role, the ecological function of these sea turtles, of course, every single act in their life, they will consider about the sea turtle in the ocean, even though they are staying in Kuala Lumpur. Because we know that Kuala Lumpur, it is very far away from the ocean. And if I go to Kuala Lumpur, to the big city in the KLCC, go to Bukit Bintang, talking about the ocean, nobody cares about the ocean. But this is for instance, an ocean literate person will manage their domestic waste properly. Why? This is due to the fact that everything on land will end in the ocean. Okay? This kind of people will understand an ocean is a body that always supply food for them. So that's the reason I want to relate this with the ecological function of the sea turtles. Let's take an example with the legendary leatherback turtle. Okay, leatherback turtle eating jellyfish. Okay, what if leatherback turtle changed to eat the plastic bag that you throw in front of your house, and during the heavy rain, this one will swept away, go into the ocean, and will eat by the leatherback? And ladder back, very, very important for us to control the jellyfish population. We want to avoid the jellyfish bloom, because once they are jellyfish bloom, they will affect our fish stock, because they will eating the fish larvae and also the fish egg and so on.
Okay, so that's fascinating. So do you relate basically the ecosystem is in some sort of balance, right? I mean, that's
yes.
What we're being taught constantly about the planet. Ecosystems are in balance. They're predators and they're prey, and there's population
yeah.
control. Now, coming back to my question about what is essentially the threat? Is it global warming seas? Because we know the seas, are getting warmer. The barrier reef, we're seeing impact in the barrier reef, bleaching, so on and so forth. Is what's happening to the turtle population on the east coast of the peninsula an effect of issues much larger than Malaysia, not within Malaysia's immediate control, or are there local conditions? So, for instance, is our exploration of petroleum having an impact? Is it the release of effluents into the seas around Terengganu having an impact? Local or global?
If you ask me, at this moment, I cannot give a single answer because it is co-founding effect. I want to reiterate that every single person, every single agency that related that might get benefits from the conservation work of the sea turtles, they might come together and join us to do the conservation. Let's take an example with the fisheries economy. For example, our oceans supply us with the food. Everyone realized that our fish fry price is increasing since last decade. Even ikan kembung, previously 5 ringgit per kilo, and now it's 12 ringgit. So the short-term solution, our government said, let us import our fish. What happened last time, hit by the COVID-19, and everyone talking about the food security, then everyone realized that our decision, we must make sure it is come from the ocean literate people and make sure this is a long-term solution, not the short-term solution. And another scenario with the economic development, isn't it? Consumers nowadays not keen to spend money on the buying things during the traveling. So we are actually can ride on the wave of this turtle tourism to build up the economy, looking at the Terengganu itself. If Terengganu last time said they want to make this species, the sea turtles, as the iconic for the tourism, and I must thanks to the government of Terengganu because they just amend the enactment of the turtles with the new amendment of Terengganu Turtle Enactment 2021 that said there will be no open trade for the sea turtle eggs. So what happened if we still continue this, looking at the sea turtles as the commodity, okay? The sea turtle eggs as the commodity. And now, effective June 2022, the government of Terengganu said, we are looking at the sea turtle itself as the new commodity. So that's the previous threat to the locally with this threat of the sea turtle eggs, and now they shift to the more pro-conservation perspective. So hopefully we can bring much more benefits for the conservation for the sea turtles.
Okay. Well, Dr. Uzair, we could go on talking to you for another hour or so about sea turtle conservation, but unfortunately we've run out of time, and that's all we have for on this episode of Consider This. Thank you so much, Dr. Muhammad Uzair Rusli, team leader of the Sea Turtle Research Unit at University Malaysia Terengganu, wrapping up the show for tonight. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.